I'm Roy Pumphrey. I speak for Stop Hinkley. I live close enough that I can see the cranes and the light pollution from the Hinkley Sea site from my house. And I've been an active member of Stop Hinkley since 1986.
Wow. Can you just tell us about the size of the Hinkley Sea site compared to the other sites down there?
Well, the Hinkley Sea site is massive because, of course, the vast majority of what's part of the site at the moment is only there to make the construction happen. That 90% of what's the site at the moment will not be the site of the power station and the turbine hall and the buildings they need to have when they finish the build. If they finish the build. But it's how big is it? 100 and 150 football pitches. It's vast because they're building two reactors, of course, so they need a more land for the actual reactors. Because they have to store the highly radioactive waste from the reactors for 60 years after it's stopped being part of the electricity generation program, they have to store it for 60 years on site. So there has to be sufficient storage capacity room. It's a huge building they're proposing to deal with that.
How does that compare, though, this 100 acres at the moment with this construction site to the existing Hinkley A decommissioned and Hinkley B, which I believe is still going? Is it and also maybe you could just tell us a bit about the history of A and B, when they started and when they stopped.
The A station, I think, was the first of the civil nuclear power stations built specifically for electricity generation outside the their demands for nuclear power for the forces for the military side of it, and that was back in the 60s, and it went out of commission in 2000, and it's nearing the end of the decommissioning stage. So there is still radioactive material there, but because the most radioactive material was moved away from the station on a regular basis as it reached the end of its production cycle, that's never accumulated. And the B station, which I think that came online in 1976, something like that, and that will stop next year. So that's, been well past its sell-by date, as are the other reactors of a similar design across the country, and they've just kept that going. But the same as the A station, the fuel has been taken away to Sellafield on a regular basis. It's not been so hot that it's had to stay on site. Whereas Hinkley C uses a different method of dealing with the fuel, and that therefore has, and because of that, it's that much hotter. But literally and sort of metaphorically, so that has to stay on site for, as I've just said, for 60 years.
Well, that is interesting, isn't it? Because I know I believe it's about a year that the fuel rods happen to be put in a giant cooling pond to
That's
cool
right,
down for a year, and then they were stuck on a train and shipped up to
That's right.
Sellafield. So, what is it about this new station that means that I mean, is it just the heat of the fuel rods, these
Yes,
uranium fuel rods?
it is a more concentrated, more powerful way of dealing with the nuclear fuel, and that means it's hotter and more radioactive when it reaches the end of the its life as fuel rod, and that's why it requires the 60 years as opposed to one. And not many local people grasped that or the significance of it when the planning application went in. So it came as a shock to people living near the site to find out, where are we now, a couple of years ago, that this is what was going to happen. And it always has been what's going to happen. It's just that they have gone from the wet method of storage and cooling that you've described, Tony, to a dry method, which requires a different sort of building and doesn't require the ponds anymore.
So the principle here is that this station, I'm a bit perplexed because I remember when it was announced with great pomp on Points West on the BBC, etc. Oh, isn't it wonderful that it's been given approval? Then there are several setbacks in regards to are the Chinese really going to fund it? There were some question marks over that. There was a Chinese delegation left in a field waiting for the British government people to come down and sort of meet them, and they didn't. They were late. This, obviously, the Chinese government don't really want to be left hanging around in a field like they were.
They
They
never got to,
were.
they never got to Somerset. They were in a hotel in London, and they never actually got down here and were to be kept hanging around on site, because it became apparent the day before. This was the 15th and 16th of July. Where are we now? 2016. Theresa May had just become Prime Minister, and EDF and the French government tried to bounce her into giving the go-ahead to Hinkley C. And the same day that the EDF board met in Paris on the 15th and said, this is all going ahead, that same evening, Theresa May said, no, it isn't. We're putting a 6-week pause into what's happening. And that night, the Chinese stayed in London prior to what would have been coming down on the following day, which they never actually did. But there was a tent, and lots of food went to waste, and lots of champagne on ice that remained on ice on the 16th of July.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? This is the way these people operate. Is they sort of it's almost like a fait accompli.
Yeah,
You've got to
that's it.
sign on the dot. You've got to sign on the dotted line, Teresa, because it's already about to happen.
That's right.
And so, thankfully, there's a little bit of pushback from the government saying, "Well, hang on, let's have a proper look at this before we say yes." So, well done. I don't often say that about the government for actually having a little bit of nous there and not just throwing our money away as if there was no tomorrow. But anyway, look, you as a local, Roy, how do people around you react? Because I imagine most of them just think, well, it's just there. There's not much we can do. And anyway, we may even get a job out of it.
Well, that's true. A fair proportion, right? A number of local people have got, there's no denying that, have got jobs at Hinkley C, and they're much better paid than equivalent jobs locally, because there's a risk factor in whatever shape or form of going to work on a nuclear station, even if it's got no fuel there. And these jobs are only short term. The massive numbers that EDF talks on about, the 5,000 plus that are there at the moment, which they expect to boost by another 1,700 in fairly short measure, and somewhere over 8,000 is what we're told, 8,500 at peak in a couple of years' time, that's not for very long. So the average time which a job lasts at Hinkley C is a couple of years, because however many they brag about 25,000 jobs overall, 5,000 at a time, if you like. But at the end of the day, there's only 900 people going to work there. So I don't know what local people who have given up jobs they've had for a while and gone to work at Hinkley C, I don't know what they do when those jobs come to an end. EDF occasionally brings up somebody who's been able to gather some new skills and get a job with a skill set that's now required, as opposed to the skill set they had previously, which is no longer required at Hinkley C. But there aren't very, well, EDF can't tell us how many of those people there are. So it's a bit vague. But on the other hand, and at the same time, people who've worked at the A and B stations and are working at the B station and have family and pensions and all that sort of thing have an attachment to the Hinkley Point setup. And, that's where we are.
So what do you say to your neighbours that say, "So what, Roy? I mean, it's just a power station."
Well, no, it isn't just a power station. There's the fact that if anybody has seen the BBC documentary about building it, one of the things they really laboured was the point that they're making the concrete around the reactor so thick that it's resistant to a plane crash. Now, we all know why they're doing that, because there is the potential for it to be a target for some sort of terrorist strike involving, as we now know, a jumbo jet laden with fuel crashing into it. So they're desperate to tell everybody that can't happen. If it happened, it wouldn't actually affect the nuclear reactor. So it's that. There's the issue of the waste, which is potentially dangerous, and there is the potential for accidents on site and radiation release. So it isn't like a wind turbine, where the worst that can happen is that the blades break off, but because they're not close to houses, they're not going to do any damage to people. So the nuclear power station has that potential. But the other main thing about Hinkley C is the exorbitant cost of electricity, because the deal that EDF managed to strike with the government for the cost of electricity, if it ever generates any, is remarkably generous on the current way thing, the current comparative costs with things like offshore wind. The agreed price was this £92.50. That has got an index linking attached to it and is currently well over £100. The last Financial Times thing said, I think, £112 a megawatt, and the same amount of electricity from an offshore wind generation is somewhere under £40. So already offshore wind and other renewables are a lot cheaper than Hinkley C's electricity. And the Hinkley C's electricity will continue to be that much more expensive and index linked to make it even more expensive for at least 35 years after it starts generating. So we're lumbered with what the audit office calculates, the National Audit Office calculates, is up to £50 billion of extra costs for electricity, which we as consumers have to stand. Every time that Hinkley C generates anything, it has to be bought at that price.
Now, there has allegedly been an accident over of a similar sort of reactor. Can you first of all tell us this week over in China, or at least it was revealed this week, it may have happened before. Can you just tell us what type of reactor, what makes this reactor different than the one in China? It seems, is this a sort of revolutionary new type of reactor which they believe is state of the art? And how does it work?
It's very much so. This should be EDF's flagship. Because this is exactly the same model of what's it called? It's a European pressurized water reactor. That's what it's called. And the one at Taishan is the first one they've actually managed to get to work. They started work in Finland and in France before they started work in Taishan. And even though Taishan was delayed, they did manage to get the Chinese manufacturer, builder, constructor, did manage to get Taishan up and working in a surprisingly short time, bearing in mind how they were struggling in Finland and France with exactly the same model reactor, which is exactly what they're putting into Hinkley C. That's why it's of interest, is because the first nuclear power station, the first reactor for a generation being built in the UK, is the same design as one that, after only been running for a couple of years, now seems to be problematic in China. And the so there are a number of concerns. Firstly, this is happening in China, and the nuclear regulators in Finland and France and the UK can be taken to be a bit more objective and probably demanding and able to have some effect on what's actually happening. We know the French have thrown out some of the steel that was supposed to be going into the Flamanville, the French reactor. And we assume they'd be similarly assertive here. Over in China, I hesitate to say whether a Chinese nuclear regulator was actually going to be capable of taking on the government-backed building and the construction of a nuclear power station over there. So, what's interesting is that although that's been going for a couple of years, and you would have thought that EDF would be making a great song and dance about the fact that, look, we've got one of these to work. I have to say that in the numerous meetings I've attended, EDF's own meetings locally, it's a dog that doesn't bark. They rarely, if ever, mention the fact that they've got one to work in China. They don't really want to talk about it. And now we get an indication of why that might be the case. In fact, it's not all going swimmingly in China after all.
As I understand it, part of the deal to switch this reactor on, if it ever gets finished, is that it's got to be shown to be working safely for a period of time elsewhere. Maybe that's in Finland or France or
It's in
China.
France.
Is that? Oh, okay. So it's the French one. So the French one's got to be switched on. It's got to be working correctly with no problems before the one at Hinkley is allowed to be switched on. So
Well,
how close are they to how close are they to switching the French one on even?
the last information we had was next year, but they have kept putting back that start date for quite a while, for years. And there's also concern that because of the problems with the steel, that they can only run it for a couple of years before they have to stop, slow it all, take it all, and then take it apart and put new steel in. And that doesn't make any sense at all, because it's extremely costly, dangerous, and time-consuming. So I don't know. But the other thing is that if Flamanville, no, sorry, the thing about Hinkley C is that the reason we believe that EDF are throwing extra people at it desperately is because that has to be up and running by 2029, or that very generous deal that I've just referred to, that falls and something else happens. The government has at least got a deadline date, which we believe is 2029, as for what happens here. And the yeah, so that that's as far as I understand it, that's the thing. There were some loans which EDF didn't take up, which were conditional on Flamanville running by last year, the French reactor running by last year, which it clearly wasn't. So it was very sensible of EDF not to make the government loans that they might have had to help them build Hinkley C, not to take those up, because they would have struggled with dealing with them because of the French plant not working.
Can you tell us what we know about what's happened in China? Obviously, it's quite secretive, but the Chinese government initially, I understand, they denied that anything had happened, and now they're admitting that there has been a problem there.
Well, there are several different sources. There's an interplay between the United States Department of Energy and Framatome, who are the French company involved at Taishan, about quite what the leak situation is and who's telling who and that sort of thing. But the a French paper says that there's a radioactive leak in the primary circuit which where the nuclear fuel is contained, and it's they think it's pretty serious. One thing which more objective observers have heard is that the radiation release, the radiation leak, is such that it would normally have caused, it normally exceeds the level which local residents outside the plant can be exposed to. It's an international standard that when radiation level of exposure for people outside the plant, when it reaches that level due to an accidental release from the plant, you have to close the plant. The Chinese are not prepared to close the plant. They have simply raised the level of exposure to their own citizens outside the nuclear power station and said they'll be okay.
So they basically raised the bar after the horses bolted, if I can say that.
I think that's all right. Yeah, that's okay. That's what they've done.
Okay, so you're talking about the primary, isn't it, the primary circuit or primary containment? I mean, there are various ways in which these highly dangerous radiation is contained within one of these plants. Yeah. Can you just explain, you know, surely if it's in the primary containment, it wouldn't have leaked out at all into the atmosphere?
You'd have thought not. So quite what's going, it's really difficult, Tony, to tell what's happening. You know, the Chinese don't want to tell us anything, and appear to be putting a real spin on their version of what's happening, whereas the French company that's involved there is very much more concerned about what's been happening. Normally, when this sort of thing happens, there's no two ways about it. You close down the nuclear reaction that's causing the, you know, in the plant, and stop the reactor until you deal with the problem, and then you start it up again. But the Chinese are not prepared to do that. And
there's another side to this, Roy, and that is that there is a lot of aggression and a very least just a trade war. There's also aggressive moves by the United States in the South China Sea, all sorts of threats to China. Yeah. And they're seen to be an enemy. I think that one of the senior diplomats, maybe Blinken, recently said, that we've had enough of China, or words to that effect. So is it possible that the United States has been leaking this stuff just to sort of blacken the Chinese name, to smear the Chinese?
Some of the information has come from Framatome, the French company. And, you know, okay, and the French really don't want to fall out with the Chinese over this, because the only people they can find to share the cost of Hinkley C and potentially Sizewell C in Suffolk are the Chinese.
That's right. Yeah, they're in bed with the Chinese big time on the nuclear energy front, aren't they?
We didn't discuss how it came that EDF, who have the sole... Right, they don't have the sole right. They're the only organisation that has been prepared to carry on with developing a new nuclear power station in the UK. And when they first set up the project to develop Hinkley C, they put out a plea for investment. And one of the people that did say they'd get involved was Centrica, the people at British Gas. Is the sort of parent company for them, Centrica. They were going to put a considerable amount of investment into it, and then they got cold feet and said it was too risky. Now, what's interesting is that the initial return on investment for Hinkley C, guaranteed by EDF's way of doing things, was roughly 10%. And then it's come down to about 7%. But that's still, with the current financial situation, a colossal return on investment. Not one British financial house or interest group of any size has shown any interest whatsoever in joining the French in funding Hinkley C. The only people they could find were the Chinese, who have roughly a third of the financial investment in Hinckley C, and they're only doing that because they have no interest in the French EPR, as it's called, the French model reactor. They want to put their own reactor in at Bradwell in Essex, but that's conditional on them joining EDF at Hinckley C and possibly Sizewell C. So, but because of that, you know, if the Chinese withdrew their funding from Hinckley C, that would leave EDF in a very difficult situation. So Framatome, who are another just a part of, you know, the French government's nuclear electricity, you know, organizations, it's highly unlikely that they would be releasing this information and getting upset about what's happening in China, knowing that that's going to displease the Chinese if there wasn't something to worry about.
Now, I mean, the discussions that I've been having with you over the last few years, it seems like what we're discussing each time, it seems, again, I'm reminded of the, you know, this seems to be almost like a dying white elephant that we're discussing here. Would you agree?
Absolutely. You know, it seems ridiculous that years of time and billions of pounds or euros of going into this when there are other ways in which we could be more quickly getting electricity from other sources which are not contributing to climate change without going down the nuclear route. It is not essential to have new nuclear, and big new nuclear in particular. Although the SMRs, which Rolls-Royce are banging the drum about, are no better, it's problematic. And whilst it has the superficial attraction of being 24/7, 365, in fact, the outages which nuclear power stations have means that over their lifetime, they are only operating for, at best, 80% of the time. And a lot of wind facility, for instance, is operating for around 80% of the time. So, you know, it's that there, nuclear is not the future. It's a cul-de-sac down which we've been dragged.
Well, yeah, I mean, it originally started, didn't it, just as a way to produce plutonium for the nuclear weapons program. And I wonder if maybe there was so much money was ploughed into that, there's this kind of financial momentum behind it, which where the industry itself is so massive and powerful financially that it can afford to lobby for its own existence, even when we're in a situation where the technology has moved far beyond that. When one of the things that I've been following is the interest, I mean, I think I see it as a much more, you know, interesting new technology. And we in Bristol, obviously, it, you know, it, with the Cut and the River Avon, we have an immense tidal range there. It's just a gift for tidal energy, all this water coming in and out every day. One of the things I was looking at recently was this MayGen program up in the north of Scotland, the Pentland Firth. And actually, the environmental freelancer Paul Mobbs and I did a program a few years ago, which was really looking at the idea of using tidal energy in the Bristol Channel, which is one of the highest tidal reaches in the world, with these gigantic rotors under the surface of the sea.
Yes.
Now, obviously, that's quite a lot of money goes into those things too. But we did it. I mean, obviously, it's very difficult to figure out how much it's going to cost unless you've got the figures for Pentland Firth up in Scotland and you can compare the two. And they were only very briefly published on the This Is Money Daily Mail website. Mm-hmm. And then the people who are behind that project, including the Queen up there, sent a legal notice to the Daily Mail to take that information down. But we got a copy of it before it disappeared. And just doing the crunching the numbers on how much energy that's generated. Now, I may be wrong, but I understand it's about 2,500 megawatts from the nuclear power station that they're hoping to get. If you were to translate the figures for the cost of the Pentland Firth array, they call it, under the sea, which is all these kind of gigantic rotors, like a kind of helicopter rotor blade under the sea. Then you were to translate that into the same sort of size power generation as Hinkley C, then you would get the cost of it would be around about $10 billion to do the undersea. You'd end up with about 2,500 turbines under the sea, which I don't know if the fish would like that very much. But anyhow, the that is the equivalent of those two reactors at Hinkley C, and it would cost about $10 billion to do that. So I wonder how much is Hinkley C now costing? Because I understand the costs keep going up, don't they?
Yeah, well, the current cost is about $23 billion, and you mentioned the fish. There's millions of fish going to get a very nasty shock, getting sucked into the water intakes for Hinkley C. So I think they might get a headache from a rotor blade, which they can see coming anyway. But they don't when the suction starts for drawing the water in for Hinkley C. Even the strongest swimming fish can't get away from that. So,
well, that's right. It'd be like a vacuum cleaner.
Absolutely. But the, you know, and the thing about the Hinkley C cost is that back in the day, they were talking about $8 billion. This was in 2010, something like that. By 2012 or soon after, $12 billion. Then we got to $18 billion, and now $22-23 billion. But EDF was saying only recently that COVID will cause delays, even though they're going to put more people at the site, which is not down to COVID. It's just trying to make things happen faster, irrespective of the COVID delays. And any delay costs them billions because they have to of the debt that they're having to service and the delay in getting electricity generated. So it's a double whammy. But
yeah, but it's, hang on, what my point really here is that it's surely a no-brainer. It's more than twice the cost of putting an enormous tidal array of tidal power under the sea. And it's far, far less damaging to the environment in terms of fish and all this nuclear waste lying around. Why is there even a decision? Surely the, you know, they've got to scrap this Hinkley C now and start building some tidal power.
I couldn't agree more. But, you know, when you have governments behind promoting new nuclear,
But this is surely a private scheme, isn't it? I don't think it's not a nationalized government scheme, surely.
Well, it is because EDF is 85% owned by the French state, and the Chinese involvement, the company is only a mask for the Chinese government involvement. So it is in fact the French and Chinese states that are building Hinkley C.
Okay, but not the British government. No. They're building on British soil.
Oh, I know. Anyway,
we talked about this accident, which is the main reason we're talking today.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you've got a pretty convincing argument that since the French company has been dishing the dirt on the Chinese, that it's likely that it is a real accident of some sort rather than just American propaganda, and we do have to be aware of that. You know, the Americans do like to have a jab at Chinese. Yeah. So what do we know about what's actually leaked out? Do we know anything about what's really gone on inside this Chinese version of Hinkley C?
Well, they call them noble gases, but whatever. Yeah, but it's radio. The thing is, it's radioactive gas that's leaking. So that's which is what. You know, if I was living nearby, I'd be, and I knew it was happening, which I suspect it's highly unlikely that the local population will know this is happening, I'd be concerned. because I doubt right. very much.
Well, it's a bit like for you, isn't it? You know, you're going to be, you know, sitting in the boots of these Chinese people in a few years' time if they switch that power station on next to you. I just hope that we've got some sort of journalism alive and well in the area in order to report on this stuff, because, you know, it's quite clear with an authoritarian government like China's, it's quite easy, really, for them to put a lid on it when these kinds of radioactive gases are streaming out of their power station.
Right. And we know that when Chernobyl blew up to all intents and purposes in what was then the USSR, they were in no rush to, they denied that anything had happened. And it wasn't until other countries reported that there were significant increases in the amount of radiation that they were recording, that they, and they could trace it back to the Ukraine, that the Russians, the USSR, Soviets were forced to admit that there was an accident in at Chernobyl, and there ever after, it was always a case of playing it down and minimizing all the downside, the deaths, number of deaths, and the amount of exposure that people have suffered from. And I can't imagine that China would be any different. It's the fire that happened up in the northwest, wind scale or sea scale. There was a fire there in 1957. And one suspects that the radioactive material that was released then wasn't doing anybody any good, but people knew so little about it, and there was no internet, social media, rapid response way of recalling, no mobile phones to film it at the time, that it was all very much played down. But you know, we do know that the evacuation plans for Hinkley B, because you know, people who live close to the plant get a calendar every year, which on the back of the pages with the months tells them what to do in the event of emergency, and they get iodine tablets which have to be taken, which absorb the radiation. So in many ways there's a happy interlude between Hinkley B closing and Hinkley C, if it ever does, starting. Which will be...
Well, look, that's the $64,000 question, yeah. Roy. Is it ever going to be open, do you think?
I wouldn't put any money on it, honestly. I mean, they are... The pouring concrete, whilst it's a technical feat, that's not the tricky bit. The tricky bit is installing the reactor and getting the reactor to work. That's what's taken them years and years over their estimated time for doing things in Finland and in France. And if the Chinese had the answer, why hasn't EDF adopted the methods which the Chinese used to get things to happen in Finland and France? So, I mean, that's never fitted with what's happened to them in Europe. You know, it doesn't, what's happened in China doesn't match what's happened to them in Finland and France, and might happen here. But you're quite right. I would not put any money on Hinkley C ever being functional.
But hang on, because I mean, billions and billions has been poured into this thing.
Yeah, but even right, if they stop now, it would still save us the balance of that £50 billion, which, as I said earlier, we would have to pay, all right, to even if the government compensated, there was some compensation for EDF stopping. Although in theory, the government keeps saying nothing to do with us, it's all down to EDF. You know, EDF have got 50 nuclear power stations in France, which they need to spend billions on to get them to a safer state than they're currently in. It's always been a question as to why they have been bothering, if you like, with Hinkley C, because you know they got a good deal for electricity, but they've had to carry a terrific debt before they get any money from the electricity, which isn't doing their balance sheet any good at all.
So they might be prepared to pull the plug just to cut their losses, you think?
Well, that's a possibility. It would mean a lot of swallowing of national pride, which people might not be all that happy to do. But, you know, you have to bear in mind that the Japanese company that was supposed to be building a nuclear power station in North Wales, in Wilfer, they, you know, gritted their teeth, and despite having spent the pump priming money on going through and getting a planning application, they backed away because they, you know, could see that the risk outweighed the benefits. And that's really where, sooner or later, it's possible that EDF will get to.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it doesn't look to me as if the sums add up. I mean, I'm looking at my O-level maths here thinking, no, it's just the sum. But also, having said that, there's also these physical setbacks. So in other words, the technology, the actual design of this new type of reactor doesn't seem to have been very, very good. I wonder who it was that signed off these various contracts to say, yeah, this is a runner, let's go for it. Anyway, Roy, can you just tell us whereabouts people can find Stop Hinkley and even come and meet you physically or on a Zoom or whatever?
Yeah, we have monthly meetings currently by Zoom. So if somebody's interested in joining by Zoom and seeing what we're up to, if they just get in touch with Stop Hinkley through the website, stophinkley.org, they'll find when things are. There is contact information there, and they can get in touch and join and contribute and hear about things we've been looking at and are doing through coming along to a meeting. We have regular monthly meetings.
Roy Pumphrey from Stop Hinkley, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony. It's been a pleasure.